This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. I've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio for you this week, beginning with John Steele Adventurer. We'll hear his story from October 19th, 1954, titled Vampire. After that, it's This Is the Story, and They Put Out to Sea, an episode that aired sometime in the 1950s.
This is John Steele, reporting on Adventure. Maybe you call it Kalimantan. Maybe just plain Borneo. But to me, it spells just one name, Rajrani. She was beautiful, the kind of beauty that makes you think of the misty moonlight of the tropics. I call this transcribed yarn Vampire. Putumayo was just a fishing village on the south coast of Borneo until a guy named Muhammad Ali opened up a place there. After that, purity and innocence died natural deaths. But you could buy provisions at Muhammad Ali's. You could buy anything from American soft drinks to Chinese narcotics. In Putumayo, if you want to go anywhere at all, you have to go to Muhammad Ali's, unless you go swimming with sharks and octopus in the bay. Or you want to take a stroll through the jungle and be eaten alive by assorted spiders and ants. Me? I wanted a cold drink in human company. So, I went to Muhammad Ali's. I picked up a beer and carried it to the only vacant chair in the place, and found myself looking at a human mountain seated across the table from me. I figured the guy for a trader of some kind, of indifferent nationality.
A pleasure, my friend, to offer you a cigarette.
Thanks.
Permit me to extend a light?
Thanks again.
American, of course.
Basically.
I was once in your country, San Francisco. Delightful city.
It was the last time I saw it.
Are you familiar with Borneo?
Not too well.
But this is not your first time here.
Oh, no, no.
No, you seem at home. My name is Vrakin, Jan Vrakin.
I'm John Steele.
What do you think of this place?
It'll do for what it is.
Well, I find it revolting, Mr. Steele. I seldom come down here. I have a charming little bungalow just up the river.
Oh?
English colonial. Wide, sweeping veranda all the way around it, surrounded by beautifully kept lawns and rose gardens. An oasis of refinement in a barbaric country.
Well, I'd like to see it before I leave here.
Well, do me the great honor of being my guest, then, tonight. We can enjoy supper with champagne.
Well, why not?
And shall we leave this dreadful place? Those girls make me sick.
Jan Vrakin owned a jeep that had seen its best days, but it was just right for the short journey along a jungle path that ran along the banks of the river.
If only you were staying a little longer, Mr. Steele.
Why?
I would arrange to entertain you. A tiger hunt. Do you enjoy hunting?
On occasion.
Well, my favorite sport is wild boar. At least twice a year.
Anything wrong?
There she is, Mr. Steele.
Who is she?
Standing there among the trees, staring at us. Pretend you do not see her.
Well, who is she?
Rajrani.
That's her name?
Yes.
She's gorgeous.
She's wicked.
Well, is she taboo?
It is no laughing matter, Mr. Steele.
She thinks it is. You're really scared of
us. Yes, I am terrified.
I don't get it.
Do not misunderstand. I was happy to meet you. Even under normal conditions, I would have invited you to my home, but...
But what?
I was deathly afraid to come this way alone.
All right, why?
I wanted company.
Because of that girl?
Girl!
Yeah?
She is not human.
Oh, no?
You laugh, Mr. Steele.
She looked very human to me.
She is a vampire.
Say that again.
Don't make fun of it, Mr. Steele.
Didn't you say she was a...
Vampire, yes.
Oh, I see.
Oh, no, I am not mad, Mr. Steele. Everyone in this neighborhood knows what she is.
Mm-hmm. That's so?
She is a vampire of the most deadly sort.
Well, there were a few at Muhammad Ali's. Only they didn't look as clean.
Mr. Steele, Rajrani has already killed 2 men this year.
You're really serious about this.
I fear I am her next victim.
Next victim?
She watches for me. I see her sometimes at nighttime, watching my house. Listen to her.
Jan Bracken was no madman. He was simply a badly scared man. We drove on. His bungalow was a big one. All he had said it was, and miles from anywhere. Modern furniture mixed with some fine rattan pieces and set off by delicate oriental decorations.
I have no servants, Mr. Steele.
Oh, you're doing fine. Can I help?
No, just be comfortable.
You do your own housework?
Of late, I'm forced to. I cannot find servants.
Too far out from town?
They'll not work for me.
No?
If it were not for the filth of the town, I would live there, but I cannot tolerate filth.
Not after this place.
And so I remain here, in my terror.
Oh, come on.
Yet you know, Mr. Steele, I can understand something.
For instance?
I told you Rajwani has killed two men this year. In each case, they themselves went to her. She did not come to them.
Look.
Oh, but it's true, Mr. Steele. And I can understand.
Better finish your drink.
They had to go to her. They were fascinated by her.
That I can believe.
They resisted for a time, then succumbed. But I will not, Mr. Steele. Oh, yes, I confess she fascinates me. She's very seldom out of my mind.
She's quite a gal, chum. Let's face it.
She is very, very alluring. There's no better word. Alluring. The English language is rich, but it contains no better word for her.
Who were these two fellows she killed?
Two natives.
Two natives, whose heads were full of voodoo nonsense.
Do you know how a vampire kills?
I know how the vampire bat kills. Punctures a tiny hole in the skin.
And feeds on the blood of its victim.
Yeah.
And in that manner, the two natives died, Mr. Steele. Their throats punctured.
Please, look through the window. What? Look through the window. There she is. She's out there.
She stood there, near one of the rose bushes, the moonlight shimmering around her. It was queer, but I felt a sort of cold shiver. Suddenly, there was something about that girl's beauty. It gave me the creeps. When a guy has vampires on his mind, that's one thing. But when the vampire is a beautiful jungle gal, that's something else. This particular vampire was the original sarong girl. Okay, so Borneo is a strange country with strange peoples living in it. So maybe this is the kind of experience that had to come from there. It happened along the Famun River. The scene was a gorgeous one. The moon looking like it was hanging on the top branches of a tall palm tree. The jungle. Just beyond the cultivated grounds of the gleaming white bungalow of a retired trader named Jan Vrakken. I was Vrakken's guest for the night, and we'd both seen Rajrani staring at the bungalow. I'm no judge of human vampires, but if Rajrani was one, there was a lot to be said for her species.
Out there somewhere, among the bushes or the trees, out there waiting, waiting.
For what?
For one of us. For me to go out there.
Why don't you take the chance?
Are you joking, Mr. Steele?
Where'd she come from?
A village 100 miles upriver.
Oh?
She was driven away from her village.
Yeah? Now here, drink this.
Thank you.
And she came down here.
Mr. Steele, she destroyed 3 men in her own village.
Oh, 3 of them, huh?
Of course, you don't believe any of this.
What do you know about her? Who is she?
Her grandfather was English.
But she's native.
Oh, yes.
I don't see any sign of her now.
No.
Does she speak any English?
English or Dutch, they all do.
Yeah?
English, most likely.
Have you ever spoken to her?
No.
Has anyone around here, I mean?
I don't know.
Well, where does she live?
Who knows, somewhere close to where we first saw her tonight.
But where? Among the trees?
In a cave, perhaps.
What does she live on?
Did you ask?
We waited for Rajrani to show herself again, but she didn't. I had every intention of going out to her. Maybe because I had to convince myself she was as normal as I was. But the night passed without further incident. And next morning, Jan Vrakken drove me back to town. Isn't this the place where we saw her last night?
Yes.
Will you stop?
Stop?
Yeah.
By all means. You see, during the day, she is harmless. I can be brave.
Brave enough to take a walk over there?
A walk?
Yeah, we may see her.
Well, I...
Or you can wait here.
No, no, no. I do not care to be left alone here.
Well, let's take a look around, huh?
Very well. There are several small caves just beyond these trees.
We can look into a few of them. She's across there.
Smiling at us.
Come on.
No.
And stay here.
Yes. Be careful, Mr. Steele. Be careful.
Hello?
Hello, Rajrani. They tell me that's your name.
Yes.
And you do speak English.
Oh, yes.
A lot of rocks around here. May I sit down? You have a sense of humor, eh?
You're a funny man. You talk like you think I'm child, I'm woman.
I'll buy that.
Buy it?
Figure of speech. Forget it.
Who are you?
I'm not on your mailing list. You wouldn't know me. My name is Steele. John Steele.
John. It was my grandfather's name.
Oh, that's so? Did he teach you English?
Some.
Why do you frighten my friend back there?
I make fun. I laugh when he's frightened.
He says everyone is frightened of you.
I know they're frightened. You are not frightened.
No. Do you want me to be?
No. You want food?
What do you have?
Fruit, many nuts.
Not now. That all you eat?
It is all I can get. I cannot hunt. I cannot kill animals.
Well, wouldn't you like to live in a house?
Oh, no.
Look. Would you like me to bring you some food?
Yes.
Some cooked meat, bread, things of that sort. Would you like that?
Cooked meat?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You bring that to me.
I'll bring it to this place after sundown. Will you be here?
Oh, yes, I will be here. You bring to me.
I'll bring you a mess of food, sure. And some milk. You like milk?
Yes. You bring, please.
See you tonight, then. Goodbye now.
I wait for you.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
So you will meet her tonight?
After sundown.
And you will take her food?
Yeah.
I resent this, Mr. Steele.
You what?
I resent it very strongly.
You shouldn't drink so much in the morning, fella.
What can she mean to you?
Oh, so that's it.
But you will do well not to go to her.
You're all mixed up, chum.
No, no. No, Mr. Steele, I am not mixed up. I am, and I confess this freely, fascinated by that girl. And I resent your audacity, your reckless courage.
Look, you take her the food. Go on my place.
You know I won't.
You can.
Thank you, no.
Well, suit yourself.
Why did you tell her that you'd go there tonight? Why not during the day?
Well, you say she's harmless during the day.
So you deliberately. What was it like being so close to her? You took her hand once. What did it feel like? I felt my heart pounding, Mr. Steele. I wanted to rush over there. Just to be as close to her.
After a while, I left Riken. I bought a lot of food, had it packed up, then went upstairs to my room. Later in the day, I went down again to eat a meal. Riken was still there, soaking up liquor. I stayed away from him. About 5 that afternoon, I was back in my room doing some writing. I didn't hear you knock, chum.
I did not knock, Mr. Steele.
Be careful with that gun.
I am drunk, Mr. Steele. Capable of anything. You look at me and you see the flabby hulk of a man that you despise. But you are wrong in one respect, Mr. Steele. I am possessed of considerable courage at this point. I am drunk with it, shall we say?
Yeah, let's say that.
The package on your bed. Is that food for Rajrani?
Yeah.
I will pay for him. I will take it with me.
Oh?
I am taking your place, Mr. Steele.
Not in that condition.
In this condition, as one gentleman to another, I am going in this condition.
You better sleep for an hour.
I can't get that girl out of my mind, Mr. Steele. No matter if she must destroy me, I must go to her. You see? I am drunk And I'm not afraid.
Find that gun.
You must not follow me, Mr. Steele.
Okay.
But you will, hmm? I can read it in your mind. You will try to take her away from me. I can't let you interfere with me, Steele. You would have followed me, Steele.
Jan Bracken was drunk when he fired at me. He couldn't miss. I was standing only 4 feet away, but his hand wavered. I felt a red-hot pain. The bullet clipped the side of my neck, just barely touched it, and I went on living. My reflexes are good. I didn't even think. I just dropped to the floor and stayed there. Sure, I was dazed, but I had sense enough not to be overly heroic. A second bullet might have finished me off. Bracken was satisfied. He picked up the food package I bought for Rajrani and ran out of my room.
Where is she? She must be around here somewhere. Rajrani! Answer me! It's Jan Bracken! I have come for you! You hear me? I am here! You hear me? Rajrani! You hear me? That was her. Where are you? Don't you hide from me. I know you're here. I have some food for you, Raj. Food! I bought you a lot of nice food, you hear me? Please don't make me wait. Must you torture me? Where are you? Where are you?
Oh, why doesn't she show herself? What is the matter with her? Oh, you're so beautiful. Please do not go away. I want to touch you. You are so beautiful. I do not care what you are. Look, here's the food I brought you. In this package. Take it. You still there, Rajrani? I do not see you. I am so sleepy. I must sleep for a little while. Just a little. You're so beautiful. Oh, yes, a man could die for the kiss of a girl like you. Oh, no. Not my throat!
I'm coming!
My throat! No! Get away from me! Get away!
Bracken!
Get away! Get away from me!
Bracken!
Steele! Hurry! Steele, she was at my throat!
Don't be a fool!
Steele, there's blood! There's blood on my throat!
What?
Sleep still. She came to me, the vampire. She came to me as I slept. I felt her kiss me, then I felt.
Oh. Here, hold it. Well, let me look at your throat.
The puncture, still a puncture. I'd have died if I had not awakened. I woke up in time. I felt her there. I brushed her away. I heard her laugh at me. Steel, she must be destroyed.
Shut up.
There's two ways only, Steel, to destroy her kind: the silver bullet or the sharpened wooden stick.
Shut up, you idiot.
My throat. Oh, my throat. She was killing me. I would have died if I had not awakened when I did. You hear her?
Come on, stand up.
Yes, help me. I feel sick.
I ought to slug you for that bullet.
Oh, forgive me. I was drunk. I was not myself.
Come on. The path's over there. Now either go home and sleep or go back to town.
To town, of course. But what are you going to do?
Never mind me. Go on. You get out of here.
There were tiny marks on Brocken's throat. There were traces of blood. In a country like Borneo, that was all the proof necessary. It was one thing for a few natives upriver to accuse Rajrani of being a vampire. But if a European walked into town with the kind of evidence Brocken could show, Rajrani's goose was cooked. They'd hunt her down and make sure she was dead. And somehow, I couldn't quite go along with the vampire theory. I don't know what I expected to accomplish, but after Brocken had left me, I lay down in the same place where he'd been lying. The grass was wet. The bugs started crawling over me. But I waited, quite sure that Rajrani was watching me. So that's it. Rajrani, come here.
Yes?
Look, you're in serious trouble. Do you know that?
Trouble?
Will you trust me?
Yes.
Give me your hand. Let's get away from here.
Yes.
There are some islands off the coast. I have a lot of friends on one of them. I'm going to take you there. You'll be safe there.
Safe?
You don't even know what it's all about, do you? You know, we'll have to get down to the beach without being seen. If we're lucky, we may be able to borrow a boat. You see? Across there? Out to sea?
Yes.
That strip of land, that's an island. We've got to get over there.
Many boats on sand. We take one?
Uh-huh. Problem is to find one with oars in it.
Boats with sails?
Good, I'll settle for that.
No!
Yeah, catamaran, even better. Come on, help me push it into the water.
Yes.
That's right, yeah. Okay, now. Hurry, climb aboard.
Steel! Doctor! Doctor!
Come on.
Come back, Steel! Bring that girl back here, you fool! You're going to burn her! Bring it rid of her! Bring her back, Steel! Or we will open fire!
Keep well down. They may start shooting. I'll have the sail up in a jiffy and we'll be on our way.
You hear me, Steel? Bring that vampire back!
There was an offshore breeze. It filled the big sail of the catamaran, and we glided away from the beach towards the island. I saw Brocken and half a dozen town toughs running towards the beach. They fired a few shots. The catamaran was hit in several places, but she kept afloat. We reached the island in about an hour and a half, and I took Rajrani to a friend of mine, a resident missionary and his wife. I told them about Rajrani, and that was all there was to it. They took her in. Well, friends, you've just heard Vampire. The answer was simple: superstition and a readiness to believe in any kind of voodoo. In each case, the men who had died had been drinking to fight their fear of the vampire. And once drunk, they had driven themselves to go where they thought Rajrani would be waiting. Maybe she always was, as when Brocken went to her. And once there, their senses left them. Sure, they were killed, but death was the result of self-hypnosis plus something else. Something did puncture their throats. Something punctured the skin of my throat as I lay where Brocken had been lying in the grass. A particularly vicious species of tick. And I brushed it off, but real fast. And so much for the vampire. Be around next week for a story I like to call Skid Row. Maybe you think it's Bleecker Street, New York City, east of 6th Avenue, or in San Francisco. At any rate, it's the longest street in the world. It's anywhere you go from Skipper Street in Antwerp to Wallamaroo, Sydney, Australia. From the Limehouse Causeway in London to Gore Street, Calcutta. It was back some years ago when I first ran into a guy named Sailor Jones. I'd seen him before that and I saw him afterwards. But it was in 1948 in Calcutta where my association with him began and his strange story unfolded. Heard with me on this transcribed John Steele adventure were Wendell Holmes and Inga Adams. I'm Don Douglas. So until next week then, and Skid Row, remember, adventure is where you find it. But don't look for it. It may find you.
Remember to be with us next week for another episode in the series John Steele, Adventurer. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. This is the story. Here is a program from the exciting series entitled Tales from Near and Far. Today's selection from the series is a dramatization of the book They Put Out to Sea, a story of the great explorers of the past. This is the story.
Roger Duvoisin, the author of They Put Out to Sea, was born and reared in Switzerland. He came to America as a grown man and brought his family with him. That his sons might understand their adopted country, he began writing books about America. They Put Out to Sea was the second of these. It is a story of the daring men who sailed uncharted seas. But more than that, it is a story of the ever-changing, ever-expanding map of the world. We look at a map today.
Madagascar, Iraq, Yukon, Kiska, Timbuktu, Chungking.
Names of islands, Okinawa, cities, Okinawa, countries scattered all over the place. Strange names, names of distant places, yet familiar to us now. But to men living several hundred years ago, these names and places were non-existent. They did not appear on the map. In those ancient days, men imagined all sorts of fantastic things about the great unknown lands beyond the forbidden seas. They believed they were inhabited by men with dogs' heads, men with eyes in the middle of their chests, men...
Aye, men without heads.
And if you dared venture forth upon the sea, a huge sea serpent would rise from the waves and swallow your ship in one huge gulp. Yes, the fearful sea was a prison wall of ignorance and superstition. Hundreds of years go by. Men begin to reach out into the great unknown. Bold explorers brave the terrors of the deep, going farther and farther beyond the horizons. Marco Polo, Vasco da Gama, and many others. The map makers get busy, changing, adding new names to their crinkly parchments. And then Columbus discovers America, a new continent. Islands, more islands, still more islands. A mad scramble to claim possession begins. The King of Spain and the King of Portugal stake their claims.
I claim these lands for Spain.
I claim these lands for Portugal.
Nay, they belong to Spain.
They belong to Portugal.
Nay, Spain.
Portugal.
Spain.
Portugal.
Spain.
Portugal.
And so they took their dispute to the Pope in Rome. He heard their claims and made his decision.
Behold, my good children, I tear this map of the world in twain. Thus. Thus I divide the world in two. To you, Manuel of Portugal, I give the eastern half. To you, Don Carlos of Spain, I give the western half. Peace be with you, my children.
And that was that. Well, that suited the King of Portugal just fine. Just fine. It gave him Africa, India, and all points east, including the Spice Islands, from whence come all the precious condiments that made eating a joyful experience. As for the King of Spain, he got the whole continent of America, an entire new world. But was he happy? Well,
I've been robbed. Robbed, I say. America. To the devil with America. It's naught but a big, bothersome clump of nothingness, blocking the way of my ships to the west.
So King Charles was indeed a very unhappy monarch. But King Manuel, seated on his throne in Lisbon, beamed with happiness and content. Now, during this time, there came to Lisbon a Portuguese sea captain who was destined to add a great many new names to the growing map of the world. His name was Ferdinand Magellan.
Sire, I thank you for your graciousness in granting me this audience. I beg leave to present my petition.
State your request, Captain Magellan.
I pray you, sire, why have I been dismissed by the Captain General of the fleet? Why have I not been given another ship to command?
Because you have a bad foot wound, Captain Magellan.
Which I received in valorous battle with your enemies, sire.
Nonetheless, you're not as able-bodied as you were before. I regret, but I cannot grant your petition.
One word more, if it so pleases your majesty.
Be short, Senor Captain. I have matters of import to attend.
Sire, since you will not permit me to serve my country, may I be granted leave to serve the King of Spain?
What use would he have for a crippled old sea dog like you?
This crippled old sea dog, as you so kindly put it, sire, might show the King of Spain a route through the American continent and the westward way to the Spice Islands.
But you know of such a passage?
Nay, I do not.
I thought not.
But such a passage must exist, and I mean to find it. If not in your service, your majesty.
Yes.
Then in the service of King Charles of Spain.
Do as you wish, Captain Magellan. For aught I care, you may go straight to the land of darkness and serve the devil himself.
Magellan was now left in Lisbon, forgotten, penniless, without a ship to command. One evening, he was approached by a stranger.
Your pardon, Captain Magellan.
You know me, senor.
Indeed, yes. Forgive me if I seem importunate, senor captain, but I've heard of your audience with the king and your intent to find the passage through America.
And I will.
Oh, to be sure, you will. It is so written in the stars.
Who are you, senor?
Rui Falero.
Rui Falero? The astrologer?
And mapmaker, captain.
Ah, yes. I have used many of your maps on my journeys. I hope your astrological predictions are a little more accurate than your maps, Senor Falero.
You have found my maps at fault, Captain?
I meant no offense, Senor Falero. Truth to tell, your maps are far more accurate than most. But how can any map of the world be accurate if we know not the real size of the world?
True. Until someone sails around the world, map-making will remain largely guesswork.
To sail around the world. By the saints, I'd give my life. But no, it is not for Ferdinand Magellan.
But perhaps it is for Ferdinand Magellan.
You are kind indeed, senor.
Say but... no more, my good mariner. Come with me.
Come? Where?
To the king's library. There's something hidden there. Something that will interest you very much.
In the name of all miracles, what is this, Senor Falero?
As you can see, it is a map of America, and it shows the passage.
But how did it get here? From where did it come?
Some Portuguese mariner must have discovered the passage and marked it for King Manuel.
And King Manuel hid the map here so that it could not come to the notice of Spain. By the saints, Falero, this is all I need to get my ships from King Charles of Spain. Look you here, Senor Falero. You are an astronomer, a good astronomer. I am a mariner, a good mariner. Between us, we can find the passage from this map. If I get the ships...
Yes, Senor Captain?
Will you sail with me?
Senor Captain, I will be very happy indeed.
So Magellan, in the company of Falero, went to Charles of Spain. He gave them the ships, five ships. By September 1519, the ships were ready to sail. With Magellan's flagship, the Trinidad, leading the way, the little fleet sailed out of the Guadalquivir River to the Atlantic Ocean. When the fleet reached the Canary Islands on the first leg of the journey, it was the faithful Enriquez, a native of the Spice Islands, who sought out Magellan.
Master, excuse, please.
What is it, Enriquez?
Trouble, Master. Much trouble.
What's amiss, Enriquez?
I hear talk. Bad talk. Much trouble talk. I hear Spanish captains say they put master in irons, take ships, win far, far on ocean.
What? Oh, now, what sort of nonsense is this?
I wouldn't dismiss that too lightly if I were you, Captain Magellan.
Surely, Falero, you don't take that seriously, do you?
Your proud Spanish officers do not take to the idea of sailing under the command of a Portuguese, my friend. You can very well expect trouble.
It was the faithful Enriquez, a native of the Spice Islands, who sought out Magellan.
Master, excuse, please.
What is it, Enriquez?
Trouble, Master. Much trouble.
Hey, what's amiss, Enriquez?
I hear talk. Bad talk. Much trouble talk. I hear Spanish captains say they put master in irons, take ships, win far, far on ocean.
What? Oh, now, what sort of nonsense is this?
I wouldn't dismiss that too lightly if I were you, Captain Magellan.
Surely, Falero, you don't take that seriously, do you?
Your proud Spanish officers do not take to the idea of sailing under the command of a Portuguese, my friend. You can very well expect trouble, plenty of trouble, before this journey is over.
So, the proud dons find a Portuguese objectionable, do they? Well, I will be on guard, fear not. And at the first sign of treachery, my friend, they will know who is master of this expedition. Captain Cartagena, what mean you by disobeying my order?
Your order, Captain General? Pray, what order are you referring to?
Did you not receive my command to transfer 7 of our mariners to the Victoria?
Command? In truth, I thought it was a suggestion.
Suggestion? Captain Cartagena, it is not my habit to make suggestions to my subordinates. I give orders.
My dear Captain General, it is not my habit, nor the habit of any true-blooded Spaniard, to take orders from a Portuguese.
From this moment hence, Cartagena, you are no longer in command of the San Antonio. Now get you forward to the forecastle where you belong. And if I have any trouble by your hand, I'll have you lashed to the mast.
It took the fleet 2 months to sail from the Canary Islands to the beautiful Bay of Brazil, where now stands the great city of Rio de Janeiro. The fleet was soon loaded with enough food for many days of sailing. Then to the south they sailed. One stormy day, when waves broke onto the ship's decks, Magellan shouted with joy, for there, just at the place shown on the map, was a wide opening in the shore.
Look there, Falero. That must be it.
Are you certain it isn't another bay, Captain Magellan?
Nay, Falero, it is not a bay. It is the passage marked on the map. Helmsman, ahoy! Hard to starboard! To the west! Off on the bow! Sound for bank!
Aye, Captain Magellan!
What's your sounding, mariner?
60 fathoms! White sand and shell, sir!
60 fathoms? It can't be, Falero.
Alas, the water grows shallower the farther we proceed.
But the map! The map cannot lie! It must be the passage! It must!
35 fathoms! Black mud and sand, sir.
35. The map lies, Captain. We've wandered into an inland river, I fear me. It is best you order the vessels about before we go aground.
Nay, it may be naught but a sandbar.
25. Sweet water, Captain.
Sweet water. Alas, the map does lie. It is the mouth of an immense river. Hard aport, helmsman. Make ready to come about.
What do you mean to do now, Captain Magellan?
We sail to the south. I told King Charles I knew where the passage is, and find it I will, wherever it is.
It was February by now. Big gray waves knocked the caravels about. The farther south they sailed, the heavier grew the seas. Nothing but gray clouds over a gray, treeless shore. Winds of hurricane force.
Can you make out the shore through your glass?
Aye. There seems to be a bay, a wide bay. Could I suggest we seek shelter there until the winter departs?
Nay, to the south we sail, Falero.
But we have outsailed our charts. What lies ahead of us we know not. Let us turn back, I beg of you, Captain.
Nay. To the south we sail until we can sail no more.
You have no right to so imperil our lives.
Ah, Falero, this I had not expected from you.
By all that's holy, Captain, if you don't leave off this insane groping in the dark, you'll have a mutiny on your hands before long.
Perhaps you're right, Falero. Very well. I will give orders for the fleet to put into the bay.
But this was not enough for the Spanish officers and their men. To spend the long winter in the lonely bay seemed unbearable to them. One day, two of Magellan's captains met secretly in the cabin of the Victoria.
This is the time to revolt, Captain Mendoza.
Can you rely on your officers and crew, Captain Casado?
They are all with me. And yours?
I can depend on most of them. As for those that will not, they will be easily taken care of before they know what's afoot.
Good. That will give us two ships, the Victoria and the Conception.
Now, all we need to win is to take the San Antonio, the biggest ship in the fleet.
Need we have to fight for it, Mendoza?
I fear it will be necessary. I have spoken to Cartagena. He tells me that Alvarez, the captain of the San Antonio, will stand by Magellan.
Then tonight, we will go aboard the San Antonio with a party of 30 officers and men and take him prisoner.
Captain Alvarez, open the door.
Yes, who is it?
Captain Mendoza. I bear a message from Magellan.
Come in, Captain Mendoza. Come in.
Seize him, men!
What mean you by that, Mendoza?
You are our prisoner, Alvarez. It is best you submit without further...
Mutiny! Ahoy on deck! Mutiny!
Have your breath, Alvarez! Your men are with us, and if you cause us any trouble, I'll send a ball through your head. Put these shackles on his feet, Cartagena. And now we can deal with that Portuguese cripple. Cartagena, take with you a party of men to the Trinidad. Tell that swine Magellan that we command three of his ships. And if he doesn't surrender, we'll send his vessel to the bottom of the sea.
Captain Magellan, sir.
What is it, mariner?
There's a boatload of men from the Conception lying alongside the vessel.
Oh, what do they wish?
That I do not know, sir. They say they would like to deal with you.
Deal with me? What do you make of that, Valero?
This smacks of trouble, Captain. I would be cautious if I were you.
Who is in command of the party, mariner?
Senor Cartagena, sir.
Oh, Cartagena.
Aye, Captain. And he's wearing his officer epaulets again, sir.
What? Why, the brazen wretch. Have him fetched aboard and bring him here to me, mariner.
Aye, sir.
But wait. Allow no one but Cartagena to come aboard, for we know not what treachery may be afoot.
Aye, sir. I'll see to that, sir.
Captain Magellan, come here. Take a look through this porthole.
What's amiss, Valero?
If my eyes serve me right, Captain... The Victoria, the Conception, and the San Antonio all have their gun bays open and the cannon trained on this ship.
What? Give me that spyglass, Valero. If what you say is true... Yes, you are right. I can see it plainly.
What does it mean, Captain?
It can only mean one thing, Valero.
Hush. Here comes Cartagena. It would be best to pretend that we are unaware of anything being amiss.
My compliments, Captain Magellan. So good of you to permit me this audience. I am sure
Hold
that...
Hold your tongue, Cartagena.
Come. Would it not be more seemly to treat an officer with more respect, Captain Magellan? Or could it be that you do not note the insignia I wear?
I note well the insignia, Cartagena. And I demand an explanation of your brazen impudence.
The explanation is very simple, my dear Captain. I am in command of the San Antonio once again.
By whose orders, Cartagena?
If you will look across the water to your vessels, you will see whence comes my authority. A triple broadside from the mouth of your vessels, which no longer are under your command.
Mutiny, eh?
Mutiny? Nay, my dear Captain, I would not name it so.
No? Pray, what would you call it? I'm sure your sovereign, King Charles of Spain, will deem it so. And hang you all.
When King Charles learns of the stupendous hoax you have played upon him, like as not he will hang you if you ever dare to show your face in Madrid, Magellan. The passage to the islands. Bah! We can see very well now that you do not know where it is. In fact, you never did know. And if the truth must be told, it never existed in any place... but your addled brain.
You will hang, Cartagena. Mark my words. You and the rest of those mutinous scoundrels will hang when we get back to Spain.
Hang? Nay. The King of Spain will thank us for saving 5 of his ships and the lives of his seamen from certain destruction. But come. We waste time in idle words. I bear a proposal from Mendoza and Casar that you surrender your vessel. where we mean to put back to Spain immediately. Well, Captain Magella, what word shall I take back to them?
Tell Mendoza and Quesado that I will meet them aboard the Victoria at nightfall to place myself and my command in their hands, Cartagena.
Ah, you are behaving most sensibly, Captain Magella.
I know when I'm beaten, Cartagena. I will rely upon King Charles to mete out justice when we arrive in Spain.
But Magellan had no intention of giving up so easily. He had many tricks up his sleeve. When night came, he sent a boat full of trusted men from the Trinidad to the Victoria, presumably with a message to the mutinous captains. But underneath their cloaks were hidden swords and daggers.
What is the meaning of this, mariner? Where is Magellan? Did he not come with you?
This message, Captain Mendoza, will explain all, I'm sure.
Let me see the message.
Mendoza, beware. He holds the dagger.
And this is the message, Mendoza. This is him, Captain Magellan. Yield, Quesado, or you'll die like Mendoza. Seize him, men.
At this same moment, other armed men from the Trinidad climbed on board, and the sailors of the Victoria found when they woke up that their ship was under Magellan's control again. The other mutinous officers surrendered quickly. Magellan had won. Captain Quesada was executed for his treachery. Cartagena was abandoned on the cold, desolate coast of America. As the winter gave way to spring, Magellan decided it was time to sail south again in search of the passage. To the south they sailed. On the day marked in his calendar as the day of the 11,000 virgins, Magellan was standing on the deck of his ship, gazing anxiously shorewards. He pointed to a high white cliff which rose up from the sea.
Look there, Falero. Look there beyond that white cliff. Is that not a deep opening beyond that cape?
It is indeed, Captain. But we've been disappointed so often. It may be another river or another bay.
It may. And yet again it may not. I will send the Conception and the Victoria into the opening to find out.
Magellan waited 3 days for the two ships to return. He limped along the deck, hardly sleeping a wink. On the fourth day, the ships returned with all their flags flying on their masts and their guns booming.
Falero, Falero, old friend. They have found it. It is the passage.
We can't be too sure, Captain.
Nonsense, man. Would they be coming back firing their guns, cheering the way they do if it were not the passage? I tell you, they have found the passage.
As they sailed through the narrow channels that form the strait, Magellan almost cried with joy when he saw the open ocean before him.
I have kept my word to King Charles. I have found the passage. My ships will be the first to sail around the world. October 14. On this day, the crew of the San Antonio mutinied, and in the night put back to Spain. We are left with 3 ships now. November 25. 5 weeks have gone by since we sailed through the passage. Nothing in sight yet. Not much food left. Perhaps tomorrow will bring land. December 2. Still nothing in sight. The little food we have left is wormy. And the remaining drinking water...
These smell so bad. One has to hold his nose to drink it.
Land! Land!
Land, yes. But an island with few trees, no people, no food. And what is worse, no water. February 9. Our situation grows more desperate by the day. The men are eating sawdust, and the rats they catch in the hold. Every day now, some of my mariners die and are cast into the sea. Is there no end to this strange sea?
It was on the morning of March 28, 1521, when they again sighted land. This time, there were no shouts of joy. The half-dead mariners that remained alive watched and waited. The little blue bump in the distance grew nearer and nearer. It changed from blue to green. And then green hills covered with palm trees were seen. Soon some brown huts showed among the palms, and then little brown men running along the shore.
Heave to! Let go of the anchor!
Captain Magellan, I come ashore with you, yes?
Very well, Enriquez. Come along. Make ready to man a boat. We go ashore. Up, oars! Wait, mariners. Stay in the boat. Those natives are armed with spears, Falero.
They do not seem unfriendly. Perhaps...
Enriquez.
Yes, master.
Step ashore and try to make them understand by sign language that we come as friends, that we want to trade for food and water.
Yes, master, I go. Make good sign talk. You see?
Look at those savages jabbering away. I hope they don't take it into their heads to use us as targets for their spears.
We have to chance it, Falero. At least it will be a quicker death than the slow agony of dying by hunger and thirst. By the sacred saints, Falero. Look at Enriquez. He's talking to them.
Yes, he seems to know their language.
Enriquez, come here.
I come, master. Master, these peoples are my peoples.
Madre mia. Your people.
Yes, master. These my islands. I am home. Home.
Do you hear that, Falero? His island. Do you hear that, men? We've reached the Spice Islands. Yes, Enriquez, my lad. 10 years ago, you left these islands and sailed to Europe, west, by way of Africa. And now you have come home again, sailing west, ever west, by way of America. You know what that means, Enriquez, lad?
Sure, master. It means Enriquez, home.
Yes, you are home. But more than that, Enriquez, you will go down in history as the first man to have sailed completely around the globe.
Yes, Enriquez was home. But for the others, the greatest voyage of all time was not ended. When it was over, 3 years had gone by since the day of departure from Spain. And it was the Victoria alone that came back to prove to the world that the earth was round. Great was the excitement as the news spread. The map makers were busier than ever, for the Victoria had brought them new knowledge of the world, the true size of the earth, new names, Magellan Straits, Pacific Ocean, Philippine Islands. Philippine Islands, poor Magellan. He could not hear the praises, the poems, nor could he read the learned histories that were written about him. Magellan lay dead on a faraway island in those Philippines. He did not live to complete the longest journey in the world, the first circumnavigation of the globe.
You have been listening to a dramatization entitled They Put Out to Sea from the new radio series Tales from Near and Far. This program has been brought to you by This is the Story. Stories of people and of nations, of yesterday and today, and what they mean to tomorrow.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Be back next Tuesday with more. In between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, and everything else Relic Radio, all at relicradio.com. There's also a donate button there. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, as well as a link to our Shoutcast stream. Thank you, as always, to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.